You're listening to UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell, and this is The Smartest Doctor in the Room, where real medicine meets real answers. Each episode, I bring you honest conversations with some of the brightest minds in health and medicine. Let's get started. Toxic mold exposure in the home is dangerous to your health. I see patients every week in my practice who are suffering from the effects of toxic mold. And in many cases, they were living in a home where they didn't even know mold was present. That's why I recommend to patients who suspect they are ill, possibly from toxic mold exposure, to obtain a test from Immunolytics, a company that specializes in mold detection with simple mold plates for your home or office. The mold plates are put in various rooms of your home and then left open for an hour. They are then closed up and you observe them for 5 days. If the mold plates show growth, you can send them back to Immunolytics and the company will analyze them and interpret the results for you. Please see the link in the show notes to order your mold plates from Immunolytics and use the code SMARTESTDOC to get a 5% discount. Today's podcast is on the use of photoimmunotherapy to treat autoimmune diseases. It's been known for centuries in medicine that sunlight has the power to heal. Before antibiotics, the sun was used to help heal even bacterial infections on the skin like streptococcus or staphylococcus. And even in modern times, sunlight has been shown to help reduce psoriasis. The double-edged sword, however, is that although we know that UV light from the sun can be beneficial, we also know that it can cause skin cancers. So the big question is UV light beneficial or harmful for our health? And can it be harnessed in the treatment of diseases? My guest today, Professor Prue Hart, is an international expert on photoimmunology from Australia at the Kids Research Institute. She has been researching this area for 30 years, and her recent work in using UV light to treat an early form of multiple sclerosis has gotten the attention of the medical world. I am truly looking forward to learning more about her work. I think you will be also. So I thank Professor Prue Hart for joining me today at this later hour in Australia.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here and obviously talk about my work.
Okay. So Professor Hart, how did you get interested in photoimmunotherapy? Now, I know also that you live and work in Australia. It's a country that's got pretty strong sunlight down there. Did any of this affect your decision to go into this area?
Partly. I mean, I've always been interested in inflammatory diseases. I think I cut my teeth on rheumatoid arthritis being an autoimmune type inflammatory disease. Then I had colleagues that were working on UV light, on sunshine, with the hypothesis that the skin is such an important organ and it has to control responses to just about every environmental insult we have. So the skin cannot react to everything. So this sun is one of those overall controllers of skin activity, and it prevents the skin from reacting to everything. And it's that ability that took my interest. So if you have an immunoregulatory process in the skin, the dermatologists were onto this by using it for treating skin conditions.
Right.
But it was obvious to them, too, that it was systemic. And
I didn't think the dermatologists went that. I didn't think, quote, the dermatologists went below skin deep.
Well, that's the interesting thing. They didn't appreciate it. But the draining lymph nodes were involved. We know that. We also know that if you treat psoriasis, another skin site is also
affected. Yes, that's fascinating. I think people don't appreciate that. They could understand in their mind, you shine some light or UV light on that one area of skin that has psoriasis, but yet other areas on the body. And we're going to get into that because, in the United States, and we're going to get into what happened to that modality because it really faded out because, before there were all these powerful biologic drugs, UV light therapy, where patients went to a dermatologist's office, and special actually places had it because they were very expensive. they would go like three times a week, get for like 5 or 10 minutes this therapy to try to control the psoriasis. So, but what you're saying, I think is so important. And I think it's almost like a trick question for medical students, like what is the largest immune organ in the body? And the answer is the skin, you know,
the
just
skin.
by surface area.
But the other thing that come out a lot in the literature, if you treat a person with psoriasis with narrowband UVB light, they often have another autoimmune condition, and that
Correct.
improves. And so it's been staring at us, actually, that there
Right.
are these systemic benefits. And if the lymph nodes are involved, we know the signals from the skin are circulating. It's like a conductor of the orchestra then for whole body homeostasis. And I mean, we know when you go in the sun, for example, that your neuroendocrine system becomes involved. So that is all systemic, and that's all part of why whole body diseases are affected and benefit from sun exposure, from UV exposure.
I think basically what you're saying, the UV therapy affects the immune system through very complicated, the T cells and what we call dendritic cells and immune hormones, cytokines, which doesn't just work locally, goes throughout the body. But I guess the question a little bit on mechanism is, I mean, and I think Dr. Margaret Kripke was one of the original pioneers in this field, you know, when she was working at MD Anderson, and she was doing research on mice and everything. But the UVB light is suppressing the immune system. But maybe you could explain a little bit two things. One, it's suppressing the immune system, but apparently not as potentially toxic as sometimes medications can be. And does it last? You know, it's the kind of thing that where, you know, obviously the Holy Grail is getting therapies that you just don't have to do
This is a really interesting question, and we wish we had the answers. The effects of UV light titrate. So it's really sort of chronic UV as well. You can get to the lymph nodes, you drain whole body. We've done a lot of work in mice where we actually have taken the bone marrow from mice that have received UV radiation, and we can take that bone marrow and transfer it into chimeric mice and allow the transferred bone marrow to seed out all tissues, and they've got an epigenetic signature from the UV radiation. In humans, we've only been able to see how long the effects last by the half-life of the cells themselves. For example, in our trial of narrowband UVB for patients with early multiple sclerosis, we could take their blood cells 90 days after their therapy and challenge them in the laboratory with a polyclonal activator. And those cells from people who had the phototherapy had reduced inflammatory responses. They were producing less of those inflammatory mediators like tumor necrosis factor. So it seems like there was an epigenetic mark on the cells, the circulating cells. It's also been shown in another study of babies that you can take their blood cells and challenge them with a polyclonal activator, and you see reduced cytokine production. Now, this
so how long are we really talking, Dr. Hart, that like you think theoretically like treatments, you know, if you have like a certain amount of treatments for a few weeks, could last 3, 6 months, a year? What do we have an idea on that or no?
Well, our trial, we followed the participants for 12 months. They had 2 months
right.
of phototherapy, and we followed them then for 12 months.
Okay.
And we found that at the end of the 12 months, we found difference in relapse rates. So something seemed to have either switched the progression of their disease. As far as following their cells, we always wanted to make sure the patients were drug-free. So as soon as they started relapsing on our trial, they were offered disease-modifying therapies. So
yes,
we have very strong data up to at least 90 days, which is 30 days after the end of their phototherapy that their
Okay.
cells had switched, they had markers, they had epigenetic markers such that when they were activated in vitro in the laboratory, they produced less inflammatory mediators. The
Okay.
other thing we've done is at 90 days, we've looked at the proteomics. So, what markers are circulating still in the blood? And a lot of those are indicative that the effect of phototherapy has lasted at least 90 to 120 days.
Well, that's very impressive. I want to ask you about a marker that we talk a lot about here in the United States, and for a while was kind of labeled the of important markers for your immune system, vitamin D. Yeah, and I know you're smiling because it's kind of, to me, the chicken or the egg type of thing. Because here in the United States, we've been screening a lot now for vitamin D3 levels, and in general, there are a lot of parts of the United States, especially in the northern latitude parts, where people's vitamin D levels, especially in the winter, is low. And we're constantly recommending that patients take oral vitamin D to try to boost that, because we say, oh gosh, vitamin D3 low levels are associated with cardiovascular and autoimmune diseases. Although it seems like that really hasn't panned out, do you think that vitamin D3 is an important immune molecule, or is it just like sort of a marker how much sun a patient?
Hi everyone. I know you may already know from listening to my podcast that I specialize in treating patients with toxic mold exposure. It's become a serious problem for many years as we deal with the hurricanes and floods throughout the country. Even simple bathroom water leaks from a toilet in your home over time can contribute to mold buildup. I can help patients that suffer from the symptoms of toxic mold, but I also rely on the patients getting their current residence inspected so they are not continually being exposed. My go-to person for mold exposure is Joe Reese. Joe is a certified mold inspector with decades of experience. He is super thorough and gives you a straightforward assessment and tells you whether it's safe to live in your home or if there is mold. I should know, I used Joe when I moved to my new home 4 years ago. Fortunately, when I moved in, I smelled the unusual odor in my basement and I immediately called Joe. He came over with his instruments and he found the problem. Afterwards, I had remediation and the problem was solved. Joe does inspections all throughout the country. He welcomes calls to his cell phone at 908-451-4592. You can also reach him by email at jprconsultants7929@gmail.com. Remember, mold in your home is not a good thing, but thankfully it's a problem that can be fixed.
I definitely believe it's just a biomarker being in the sun. And
That's
that's
what you
why
believe.
people associated lots of disease with low vitamin D levels. But supplementation trials have been disappointing.
Yes, I think
Billions of
that's,
dollars have gone into that. And they've shown, some studies have shown a little benefit, some show no benefit of vitamin D supplementation. I think we've just got to say that yes, vitamin D may have a small role, but it's certainly not the holy grail. And I think that's why we took the approach to say we want to include all molecules made in the skin on UV exposure.
Right. Well, yes.
So
You
we
mentioned.
gave the narrow band UVB, which is the best surrogate we could safely give for sun exposure.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And okay. I think the vitamin D story, I think just many people have worked on it. They've just said, yes, it's very important to have it. At low levels, it's important for biochemistry. But for 99% of us who have got sufficient vitamin D for our physiology, it's not an important molecule. And really, there have been a lot of editorials suggesting it's just making very expensive urine.
Interesting. Okay, so that's interesting for, I mean, again, I still recommend people, you know, supplement if they're low, but I think to take it that it's going to make an immune change is, to dispel that.
Unless you overdose on vitamin D, it won't hurt you either. And that's what I say to people.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know,
it won't, you should be thinking about an alternative to get
the vitamin D in your own body. But isn't it also true, too, as we age, that we don't really produce, the sun doesn't really help us produce vitamin D that much?
But we have to make sufficient vitamin D. I don't think aging...
From sun exposure, yeah.
Yes. I don't think aging is a variable, really, to consider in whether you should take vitamin D tablets or not.
Okay.
The other point of vitamin D is that... It's only one of the pathways in your skin. I think, you know, to think that vitamin D was the panacea, it's naive to think humans evolved under the sun. They went from dark skin to white skin to get the benefits of sunlight. It'd be naive to think it was all through one pathway. Mm-hmm. So I think we've got to say, well, there are multiple pathways in skin by which sunlight, by which UV controls body function. And I think that varies from individual to individual, the proportion. I mean, we know that vitamin D is good for bones in development, but in adults, less important. I think vitamin D is faded into the background. I think we've really got to think of all the other hormones, neurotransmitters that are made in your skin, that then can control pathways. They control immune, neural, endocrine pathways that then control body. Because most diseases in the body have an inflammatory component.
Right.
Therefore, vitamin D may potentially or affect them, but more so sunlight can potentially affect them. And it's that sunlight that... will control. Think of gradients. They're there for just about every inflammatory disease.
Yeah. What about race? I was just thinking about this right now, too. And I know you have diversity in Australia to some degree also, but here in the United States, you know, the African-American population, our Hispanic population, you know, they have darker skin. We know that with African-Americans, you know, probably from evolution and everything, you know, their skin, you know, it makes it difficult for them to even raise their vitamin D levels. Is that all part of like sort of evolution? I mean, do you see that in Australia, like where there's...
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, sick skin, they have lower levels. They are encouraged to seek more sun. There hasn't been studies as, for example, in the African-Americans. But there were theories about enzymes metabolizing vitamin D too that may vary with the genetics. Don't know quite where that is at the moment. But I do know, for example, in Australia, they've nuanced the sun exposure recommendations, suggesting that if you've got darker skin. some of the sun's protection recommendations are not so valid.
Let's talk about epidemiology for a minute, because it's actually very important in diseases. You know, we know here in the United States, we're constantly looking at that because we're always trying to figure out what does the data tell us, you know, because, you know, we like to look at populations and hopefully they can give us a hint where to do the next research. And probably one of the most compelling epidemiological data has to do with the autoimmune disease, specifically multiple sclerosis, where there's definitely a pattern related to geographic on the earth. And as you well know, that near the equator, the prevalence of multiple sclerosis is close to zero. Whereas in Northern Europe, North America, there's like over 100 cases per 100,000 people, a much higher rate.
I think the variation can be 40-fold from
40 times higher. Okay. So yes. Is this enough for you to say that, you know, because obviously there's a lot of factors. I mean, people may be living near the equator, they'll live a more primitive life, maybe better water, less pollution, you know, et cetera. But do you think this is, in your opinion, I know this is obviously a lot of part of your work, that this is a strong enough indicator that sunlight is a key factor in
I think that's been shown quite strongly that, yes? That sunlight okay. is a key factor. And it's interesting because it doesn't happen in all diseases. It happens more in those with inflammatory components. So there's mechanisms being shown to be relevant to that. There's also seasonal differences that support the latitude gradient. So you can, again, it's the amount of sunlight that you get in different seasons that control some of these diseases. And I think the latitude gradients, yes, it's one of many of the observations that support that sunlight as a component of the prevalence of multiple sclerosis and other autoimmune diseases.
So let's talk now about some of your groundbreaking work. Multiple sclerosis is a terrifying disease for anyone that gets diagnosed with it. You know, there is a range of the condition. As we know, some people have a more chronic but less severe form. Other ones have severe relapsing forms. You know, it can be extremely debilitating where they end up in wheelchairs. And your work is really fascinating. I was reading in Scientific American about your work, that you were doing trials on this condition I hadn't heard of before, Kolbe syndrome, which apparently is like an early stage or precursor to multiple sclerosis. Maybe you can explain. And just for our listeners, you know, multiple sclerosis is considered a autoimmune disease where the myelin sheath, the sort of the covering of the nerves, gets attacked by the person's own immune system, leading to all of these type of neurological symptoms where they get loss of sensation or motor nerve impairment. So how is this phototherapy, this UVB therapy, supposedly treating a systemic disease? Okay, we're not talking about a skin disease now. We're talking about shining light on someone, I don't know what areas, maybe you'll explain
body.
To us.
Whole body.
So the
it's
whole
like
body.
Dermatology patients, they go into a booth, yes,
okay.
Eyes covered, genitals covered, and get whole body and it was exactly the same protocol that was given to patients with psoriasis.
Really? Okay, the exact same way. Okay.
So they'd go, and it's because it's the same as given to those patients, it was easy to get ethical approval to run this trial.
Right, because we know that there's a degree of safety, right?
Yes, and we know that narrowband UVB does not include the wavelengths that stimulate skin cancer. So
that's a very important point, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 311, 312 nanometers, and there's been no indication through dermatology that that induces skin cancers. So we had an ethical treatment. We had, I'd obviously done a lot of work in mice, and as have others, in experimental animals, looking and tracking immune cells and what UV shined onto shaved skin did in systemic immune model of multiple sclerosis. So we got the ethical approval. We decided the best people to try this treatment on was those very early in the disease so that you could try and switch the
right, because sometimes they have chronic changes already. It's very hard to reverse.
Exactly.
But was your group the first to think of doing this?
Yes.
You were just to say
who had done it on people who had already been diagnosed for 13 years, and they're also already on hard drugs. Well, sorry, disease-modifying drugs that are quite brutal to the body in many instances.
Yes.
So them early in the disease before they had any treatment at all. So they were hard to find. We only found 20 in 2 years that agreed to come on the trial.
And were they hard, Professor Hart, were they hard to diagnose? I mean, do these people have lesions in their spine or brain on the MRIs?
I mean, they have to have an MRI lesion. They can't have no indication that they've had this previous lesions. So often the radiologist can tell by the lesions whether this is the first event, second event, or other.
Oh, really? Okay. So they had to have that. I mean, like for you to make this diagnosis, to make sure it wasn't something else you were treating.
If you've been following the podcast, you may know I practice holistic functional medicine and immunology. In fact, at Mitchell Medical Group, we've been treating chronic fatigue patients for 3 decades. It's critical in this work to have a trusted pharmacy that can compound medications for our sensitive patients' needs. ITC Pharmacy has been our go-to pharmacy the entire time. They can make medications ranging from thyroid hormones to dye-free medications for all of our highly sensitive, even allergic patients. If you or your holistic doctor are looking for these very specific patient medications, you can contact ITC at 888-349-5453. They have licenses throughout the country and can have medications delivered right to your doorsteps. My patients have been so pleased with their service, and you will be too.
Exactly. They were already established as multiple sclerosis. So clinically isolated syndrome is a sort of precondition. They usually come in with optic neuritis. They've got blurred vision. And we had to start them on the trial within 120 days of that first approach to a neurologist. Our other problem is that many people have this first episode, but they stay in GP land. They don't go to a specialist neurologist where we're recruiting. So we did miss a lot of people that way. Because a lot of people wait then to, because we know the blurred vision gets better and then it lasts up to 24 hours and then they may recover and not have a second episode for months or.
Could this treatment be used in acute flare-ups or is that you need additional?
Well, we'd like to think that's where it's going. If it's acute flare-up, they probably are on stronger disease-modifying therapies, or at least they're offered that.
Right. Because optic neuritis is extremely, not only cause blurry vision, it can be extremely painful.
Yes. Well, but it's more the blurred vision, and they must have an MRI confirming that there's a lesion in their brain. So those were the people we were recruiting. We were not offering them any other drugs. In Australia, it was just therapy or no therapy under these experimental conditions.
So how many patients were in the trial?
20.
20. And out of the 20, how many would you say showed a significant response?
All 10 of the controls were fully defined as multiple sclerosis within 12 months, but only 7 of the 10 that received narrowband UVB had relapsed to patent multiple sclerosis. So we had 3 patients that had not. Now, it wasn't statistically significant, but the beginning, and that's where all medical research starts. But we had followed them immunologically through that year. We had biobanked their cells and their serum, and as a scientist, that's where we've been doing a lot of work, following the proteomics in their blood, following the cells in their blood, following cell function in their blood with the 12 months that they were on the trial.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy? falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And that's where the exciting outcomes have come. We also followed their depression, their social functioning. We followed their vitamin D levels, obviously. We all know when you go out in the sun, you go down to the beach, the beta endorphins, you feel good, you feel better. And treatment for the people, they were loving it. So they all recorded a higher level. They had their energy back. They had a higher social functioning. We had markers in their blood that we used a special MS disease activity score that's now being used in proteomics, and we're able to show the UV reduced that very significantly. We had all the markers going the right way. It's just that we only had 20 in the trial.
And yeah, it was a small trial.
We're trying to do a much bigger trial at the moment.
Do these people have to be careful then going out in the regular sunlight if they're getting UV therapy? Like, do they have to wear sunscreen when they, like, what do you tell them? You know,
well,
like,
Australia, the
sun can be very strong.
We gave them dosimeters to wear and we recorded.
Sorry, what is that?
A dosimeter it's like a wristwatch.
Oh, okay.
That recorded their sun exposure for the first 2 months.
Okay.
We told them to have their normal life.
Wait, so you didn't tell them, let's say a person was a gardener or somebody who's outdoors a lot anyway, just, you know, for whatever example, he's coming to get the UV narrowband treatment, but did he have to cover up his skin or her skin when they were, wearing
we
sunscreen?
Just tried to do the trial in winter months as best we could.
Oh, okay.
But we did. We have measures of all their sun exposure from their dosimeters, and there was no significant difference from the group between the group. Okay. It's just that proteomics was in what it told us in identifying who was the controls and who had received narrowband UVB.
That's important for sure. You know,
and that is what has given us hope. We accept. We need a much trial. We are following the signs that were already there from dermatology patients that were treated with narrowband. I mean, you can now, proteomics is telling us the same for psoriasis patients receiving narrowband. All the inflammatory markers are reduced, and we had them reduced a month, prolonged for a month after the treatment itself. So, how long?
And it does, and just so we know too, which is kind of important in comparison to drugs, the change, you keep on saying proteomics, which I want for the listeners, you know, that's a little medical term, is basically like the immune hormones, inflammatory markers, but they don't go down so much that you're immune compromised. Is that correct? So it's sort of like a gentle.
No. It's,
you know what I mean? Because with the biologics that people here get in the United States, I mean, all you have to do is watch a TV commercial, and yes, they show people barbecuing and having a great life. But but right at the end, in as fast as they can, and this can cause lymphoma, or this can cause this unusual infection.
Is such an important point, because I think our immediate future for narrowband UVB is being adjunctive treatment to the biologics. So if you could reduce the concentration of the biologics and supplement it with some narrowband UVB. and the patients will be better off.
Point.
And we advocate that for people with psoriasis. I mean, a lot of patients don't want to go on biologics at all. They want a more
natural. I know, right. They're very afraid of them.
They want a natural treatment.
Right.
And that's what narrowband UVB can offer. And you say it's offered less in the United States. In Australia, every dermatology practice still has a number of narrowband UVB capsules where they give their patients three times
really?
A week narrowband UVB. And it's effective. It's what the patients choose. And I understand a number of health funds in the United States and in the UK are now offering devices, UVB lamps, for patients to take home and have their treatment at home. And
yes, that's that company Cytokine, right? The Cytokine?
Yes, well, I was going to that.
Yes. But
the health funds, Kaiser Permanente in California, has offered all, they've written a number of papers where they've given their patients with psoriasis, instead of giving them biologics, they've given them narrowband UVB at-home units. And the patients love it because there's no commuting, they're safe,
right.
they're as effective.
I want to emphasize this because you're saying probably the gist of what this is about, which I think is very exciting for any listener because, again, a little bit of the pharmaceutical company with their big pockets and big marketing, that this treatment, especially for psoriasis, is effective. It's minuscule in cost, whatever, $3,000 or something for the machine compared to these biologics, which are $80,000 or $100,000. And what I see also, too, in the United States, it's not unusual for a patient that's getting the therapy, the biologics, and then a few months into the therapy, 6 months, the insurance company says, we're not paying for this anymore. You know, and the patient's like, well, what do I do? And so this is really a remarkable thing. I'm glad to hear that Kaiser, which they're kind of always ahead of the curve here, and obviously, especially in saving money, but the patients are very, I think, open to this.
Open. And clinically, the narrowband has been shown as effective as biologics.
Wow.
But also, the push that narrowband UVB, safe that it's also affecting their mental well-being.
That's
what the biologics is not giving. It's
right.
It's stimulating their energy levels. They're less depressed. They obviously have better cardiovascular, all these other diseases where there's an inflammatory component. The narrowband is reducing it. We know aging, there's a little bit of inflammation. We know
right.
The whole body effects of the narrowband UVB has not been fully appreciated until recently. So we're trying to think, if you can't just have that as a treatment, have it with a reduced dose of the biologics.
Yeah, that
and
makes
the
sense.
Neurologists are coming around, but we've got to get funding for that trial.
Yeah, no, this is super important. Because again, too, one of the most scary things, obviously, in the last several years, too, especially even during the COVID pandemic, was that all these people on biologics, I mean, they were, again, also more vulnerable, I think, then they, to, a severe COVID infection than, the person, who was not on one.
Yeah, so true. And, I mean, narrowband UVB, it's in the patients.
Yes.
They get control of their own treatment. They can have these units at home. They're like a...
Is it a box? Is it because it's not a room. Like, you're not going into a room.
Oh, no,
like
no. That's the full body one that you had to do. No, these are like a space heater.
Like a space heater, okay.
And you can, your bathroom door, for example, you could hook them there. You just start your day with 2 or 3 minutes either side, full body in front of it. There's safety
That's
measures
it. I mean, so
on the apparatus.
It's just 2 or 3 minutes.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
And the Scientific American article had
a picture of a patient. Yeah.
But I think Cytokine, people are encouraged to go to the website. This is a company that can sell them.
Yes.
I can give you an email for inquiries, but also a 10-minute discovery call, because people with long COVID or MS or any condition where they're they might get a new approach to their treatment.
Yes.
And their enthusiasm, their energy levels come back. You move to a different treatment. We know it's as safe as could be. And a lot of it is just knowing you, this empowerment.
I do have to ask you one thing, though, too. Is there any, like, contraindication, like, if somebody's had a history of skin cancer or melanoma?
Well, the dermatologists have not. Following all the dermatology literature, no. That's... People, if they have a genetic, they've got them in their family, yes. But anyone with melanoma in their family should be vigilant all the time.
Right, because that, there's that genetic...
So I don't think that's any bigger hazard. No, the College of Dermatology Academy, they all recommend narrowband UVB is safe. So why wouldn't it be safe for all the internal conditions? I think we've got a number of patients that will give good reports. We asked our patients to come to go to a dermatologist's rooms 3 times for 8 weeks. And not one of them missed a session. They loved it. You get a little bit of tan.
Let's say people have this at home, though. Can they end up doing it too much? So let's say they want to get a treatment. They should do it similarly as they would in a doctor's office, 2 or 3 minutes for 8 weeks, and then take a break. Is that how that would work?
Yes. Well, a lot of them have it for longer than that. That was our trial. Was for 8 weeks, as you know, for psoriasis.
I mean, people could people do this daily for months, most likely?
Yes, I've heard that. I've heard that. Apparatus has safety catches. You know, the only side effect can be a little bit of erythema.
Do they get a little sunburn or suntan from...
This little bit of sunburn, little erythema. And then you know you've had too much. But there are safety... things inbuilt the machine. It's, as you know, it's wavelengths of 311, 312. It's nowhere near 300 nanometers, which is...
Yeah. Professor Hart, they mentioned in the Scientific American article, Dr. Lucas, that they're really even, they're getting very, this may have even applications to Crohn's disease and type 1 diabetes. Are you optimistic with that as well?
I'd like to take a moment to let my listeners know that my new book, Conquering Candida, is now available on Amazon in paperback and ebook. If you believe you suffer from Candida, this is the first book in 50 years since the original book, The Yeast Connection by Dr. William Crook, to give credence to this underdiagnosed and undertreated condition. If you also want to understand gut health and the microbiome, I also believe you will enjoy this book. I do appreciate if you read this book to rate it on Amazon and provide your comments and a review.
I would say yes. They are diseases with latitude gradients. With type, it's often hard to identify a child that's prone to type 1 diabetes other than their sibling of someone who has.
Right.
But definitely sun exposure should be recommended.
Let me ask you, this is the big question too, you know, because for a long time, dermatologists, don't walk out of your house without sunscreen, da-da-da-da-da. And then there was a change by some of the thinking. They said, you know what, before the height of the day, let's say here, you know, in the U.S., like before 11 o'clock, don't wear sunscreen for at least 20 minutes, get some of that sun exposure. What would you advise somebody, a friend or family member, about the use of sunscreen? Like, when should they use it? When should they not use it?
The trouble with sunscreens, it gives you a security.
That's true. I think some research from Australia showed that. I think I'll never forget. I think it was 20 years ago, which got buried, that in Australia they showed that using sunscreen had no benefit in preventing like melanoma. It was because, you know what, people had a false sense of security and they'd stay out in the sun probably obviously longer than the sunscreen was working.
Exactly. If I think I'm going to be out in the sun many hours, I put on sunscreen. Always say a hat, always protect the head.
Yes, that works well too.
Head and neck, most important places. We know that, a lot of melanomas are not caused by UV light either.
Yes, that's right. I think it's a big misunderstanding, right?
I think it really comes to harm versus sun exposure. We know the harm is skin cancers. The benefits, the internal benefits on autoimmune diseases, cardiovascular diseases, cancer development, or cancer progression, metabolic diseases, all those benefits far outweigh skin cancers. We know, I'm Australian. I mean, we,
yes,
70% of us will have skin cancers by the time we're 70. We just burn them off. Yeah. They're not, they're the harm, but it's only skin deep. The benefits, yes, the benefits are far outweigh in health economics, health. And I'm being brutal in saying that, as long as you're vigilant about melanoma.
Yes. But
cardiovascular disease, cancers are the biggest killers.
Yes. And
we know both of those have latitude gradients. We know blood pressure is much lower in summer. And we know blood pressure is a main contributor to a lot of cardiovascular disease outcomes.
You said this so well. This is how we're ending our podcast, but you so eloquently, and I think you make a really good case for this new kind of treatment and the importance of, you know, careful but regular sun exposure when possible.
Never get sunburned. Yes.
What's that?
Never get sunburned, though.
No, that you got to try to avoid. That's obviously, yeah, that lead to, you know, unfortunately, skin cancer or melanomas. That's been proven. Professor Hart, any last things you'd like to mention, you know, as we're wrapping up? Because this has been, I think, an incredibly important podcast, one of my most important, and especially in a new type of therapy, or one that's been around but underutilized.
Well, I'd love to send to you so someone can contact you with the website for the company called Cytokind,
yes.
Cytokind.
Right.
And also their email, but I can send that to you.
Oh, I appreciate it. We'll put that in our notes. Yes, John McMahon, who actually brought us together, which I'm very grateful for, is the owner of the company. He's a very bright man. I think he was an engineer, and he came up with this idea. And, you know, sometimes you really need people to think outside the box, literally, or in the box, to come up with treatments that are safe and in the best interests of the person, not necessarily the pharmaceutical company.
But I think it's been there for us to appreciate with the latitude gradients,
yes,
seasonal effects, evolution. Why did we, yes, evolve to have white skin?
Right.
To use sunlight, and to, right, use sunlight for our general biology. We need it.
Yes. Yes.
For homeostasis.
And what I think today, actually to end this, I think what's more important than ever, especially for our children, they're so involved being indoors, you know, on devices and not outside playing. I remember myself growing up, I was a tennis player. I would go out, grab my racket. I was outside for 6-7 hours a day playing tennis. And unfortunately, in today's world, some of the kids, they plop in front of their laptop, their cell phone, whatever, and they're not getting that sunshine. They're not getting all the benefits that nature has to offer.
But a lot of their parents are also encouraging them not to be out in the,
yes,
sun.
Yes, that's not good either. Not good either.
The whole family has to appreciate,
yes,
just that little bit more outside, little bit more sun exposure. And then we can use it as well in therapy.
That's a great way to end. Professor Hart, thank you so much for your information. I think this is super beneficial. I hope all our listeners appreciate your expertise and look into this therapy. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me here on UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell. If today's conversation was useful to you, please share it with someone who could benefit. You can find every episode of The Smartest Doctor in the Room wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, stay well.